百紧缺人才培训工程教学系列丛书，英语高级口语资格证书考试，高级听力教程第二版，周国强、杨永平主编，由上海外语音像出版社录制出版。第五盒
An Advanced Course of English Listening Second Edition。Part 2. Checking Figures. Conversation 1.
Good morning. Here are ceramics.
Hello. Good morning. Is Maria Perez there, please?
I'm sorry. She's away on a conference at present. Can I help?
Is there anyone there who's handling her work while she's away?
Yes, I am for the moment.
Ah, hello. This is Robert Burton, purchasing manager at Cranfield Interiors. Who am I speaking to, please?
My name's Ann Garvey.
Ah, yes, Ms. Garvey. I'm ringing about an order we placed recently for floor tiles, and I'd like to check progress.
What was the order number, please?
It's order number IJ618/392.
IJ618/312.
392.
392, right, and that was for floor tiles?
It was for floor tiles, terracotta floor tiles. I ordered 1,500 boxes on, the 13th of August.
Right, and how can I help you?
Well, they were due for delivery on the 30th of August, and they've not arrived.
Oh, I see.
We need them urgently, and I'd be grateful for a report on where they are.
Right, well, perhaps I could check that information then.It was terracotta floor tiles, 1,500 boxes.
That's right.
And the size of the tiles was 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters?
Yes.
20 by 20. I can't find the order here, I'm afraid. What was the total cost?
They're normally £35.85 a box, but with the usual 8% discount, the total cost was £49,473.
Sorry?
£49,473.
£49,473.
Correct.
And that included an 8% discount?
Yes, that's right.
Right, okay, and just the order number again. It was IJ618/392?
That's it.
Well, I'm sorry about the delay. What I'll do is I'll have to pass this information on to Ms. Perez,and ask her to get back to you as soon as she can.
Okay. Very grateful if you could do so. Many thanks.
Could I take your name again, please?
Yes. My name is Burton. Robert Burton. That's B-U-R-T-O-N.
B-U-R-T-O-N. And your phone number?
0161-355-6801.
Well, thank you for calling, Mr. Burton.We'll do our best to sort out the problem.
Thank you, Ms. Garvey. I look forward to hearing from you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Conversation 2.
Good afternoon, Euro Ceramics.
Good afternoon. Is Maria Perez there, please?
I'm afraid she's away at the moment. Can I help?
Yes. This is James Rogerson from New York Interior Design. We have an order in place with her, and I'm thinking of increasing the quantity ordered.
Right. Your order was?
Order number 927/XG/12.
927/XG/12. Right. And the order was for what?
For terracotta floor tiles.
Okay, I've got it. The order was for 330 boxes. Is that correct?
It is. I'd like to increase the order by 20%.
20% increase.So that's 390 boxes.
No, it's 396 boxes.
Sorry, 396. That's excellent. I'll pass that on to Ms. Perez.
Before you go, clearly this is a larger order now. The original cost per box was $108, and she allowed us a discount of 12%. The total cost was $31,363. Now that the order is for 396 boxes, can we increase the discount? I'd be prepared to discuss the details with Ms. Perez, and I'd be grateful if she could give me a call back.
So you'd like to talk to Ms. Perez with a view to renegotiating the discount on the large order?
That's it exactly.
Well, I'll pass that information on to her. As I said, she is away at the moment at a conference, but I'll try and get in touch with her. How urgent is this?
Well, if she could give me a call back within 48 hours, it would be appreciated.
Fine. And your name again is?
My name is Rogerson. James Rogerson.
Is that R-O-G-E-R-S-O-N?
That's right.
Could you give me your phone number?
212-986-8652.
Well, thank you for calling us, Mr. Rogerson, and I'll pass on your message to Ms. Perez.
Many thanks indeed.
Part 3, Checking Details. Telephone Conversation 1. John Spey, Administration Department.
Oh, good morning. This is Satoshi Takahashi. I wonder if you could help me. I'd like to check some details on the conference, the sales conference in Chicago for September.
Yes. What can I tell you?
Well, the dates I have are the 18th to the 21st of September. Is that correct?
Let me check. No, I'm afraid the dates have been changed. It's now the 15th to the 18th of September.
So the conference starts on the 15th and goes on till the 18th.
That's correct.
Right. Now the venue is this year is the Chicago Hilton. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
What about accommodation? Will it be possible for us to stay at Chicago Hilton?
I'm afraid there aren't any rooms left at the Hilton, but we have made arrangements with the Waikiki, which is very...
Sorry, could you speak a little more slowly?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying that I'm afraid we don't have any rooms left at the Hilton.
So, in other words, we'll be at a different hotel.
That's right, the Waikiki, which is very near.
Could you spell that?
W-A-I-K-I-K-I.
Okay. Now, is there a final registration date for the conference?
Yes. We need final registrations by the 20th of August.
Could you say that again? The what of August?
The 20th.
The 20th of August, right. And what about the program? Is anything organized?
Not yet. We'll be sending details by post in August.
That's great. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Goodbye.
Yes, thank you. Goodbye.
Telephone Conversation 2.
Hello, Satoshi Takahashi.
Hello, Mr. Takahashi. This is Paul Wilcox from London.
Ah, yes, hello. What can I do for you?
I'm ringing about my travel arrangements for the visit. There's been a bit of a change. I was coming on Tuesday, the 26th, but I've had to postpone it. I'm now coming on Thursday of the same week. I'll be arriving on flight DA-117. It gets in at about 8 a.m.
Sorry, just a moment while I get a pen. Right. Can you go over that again?
Okay. I was originally going to arrive on Tuesday, the 26th, but I've had to change to the Thursday of the same week.
So, in other words, you'll arrive 2 days later on the 28th.
Yes, that's correct. I'll be on flight BA-117 and I arrive at...
Sorry, I'm afraid I didn't catch that.
I'll be on flight BA-117.
BA-117, and what time do you arrive?
8 a.m.
So, you'll be arriving at 8 a.m. on Thursday the 28th on flight BA-117.
That's right.
Good. I'll be there to meet you.
Thank you very much. And I'm very sorry for the inconvenience.
No problem. Don't even think about it. I'll see you on the 28th.
See you on the 28th. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Part 4, a presentation on computer conferencing.
And as you know, that was fine for its first time, but as new problems came up, we began to need new solutions. Our company became interested in computer conferencing because of difficulties we had encountered with communication between head office and our various branches in the rest of Europe. Computer conferencing seemed an ideal way to share expertise and information with the organization. We had the hardware necessary and staff who were comfortable using computers. The system was initially set up for a trial period of 1 year, funded partly through a grant from the European Union and partly by ourselves. It involved a team of people working in Britain, Spain, France, Italy, and Southern Ireland. I don't want to spend too long on the introduction, as I think it will become more interesting when you see the actual program and try it out yourselves. So, before I move on, has anybody any questions? Yes?
Could you tell me exactly how much it will cost?
Yes, the cost was £50,000, but this, as I said before, was partly funded by a European funding agency. Yes?
Do you know how much productivity increased by?
Well, that's a difficult question, of course. We can say that there was increased motivation and interest, certainly. Productivity rose by 8%, but that is a small number of people in a special situation for just 12 months. Yes?
Is it possible to say how many people were involved?
Well, one team in each branch, London, Paris, Dublin, Rome, and Madrid, so about 30 people in all. Yes?
Can you tell me if there were any disadvantages?
Well, as you know, with any new system, there will always be some problems. I suppose the major thing was the time it took people to be comfortable with the system. It was at least 3 months before most people were happy with it. And these are bright, flexible people who are very computer literate. I think it has to be seen as a long-term investment. Shall we go through now to have a look at
Part 5, Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. In Australia, when motorists overtake, they are legally required to leave at least a meter between their car and a cyclist, but many of them are unaware of this requirement.
2. There are a couple of options, and we are doing more testing before deciding which way we can go.
3. Last year, homes with internet access increased by a massive 49%. Updated figures released by the Statistics Bureau last week reviewed 1.3 million households now have internet access.
4. The internet is viewed as the information superhighway, but it can also be the misinformation superhighway, warns a psychologist.
5. This moderate reform would break an unfair monopoly, create a new growth business, and benefit consumers as well.
2. Passage Translation.
1. I want to slap a penalty of $1,000 on any of my subordinates who say the life insurance industry is now in a critical phase, said the president of a Japanese life insurance company. Everybody knows that the industry is going through hard times. What we need to do is ask ourselves what we should do about it. That is the question every one of our people needs to answer clearly. Working for our company is easy. The way we do business is relaxed, with little sense of tension among 9,400 employees, who are talented, but not excessively so. I want to expand our workers' job awareness.
2. A man and two children in his car barely escaped being hit by a train after the man drove a car along railway tracks. Police charged the man, who was an unlicensed driver and under the influence of alcohol when he drove, onto the railway tracks at Bridge Street at 12:20 p.m. on Saturday. A passing motorist alerted the police. Police arrived on the scene moments before a train narrowly missed the car, with the two young children still asleep on the back seat. A police spokesman said the man had a blood alcohol reading of 10.
Unit 12, Part 1, Planning Ahead. Bob Shaw.
Hello, Bob.
This is Victoire. I'm just phoning about your presentation next week. I think we should check everything again.
Again?
It's a big contract, Bob. I don't think we should take any chances.
There is one thing, actually. I've got the address, but I'm not sure where the office is.
Aren't you going to take a taxi?
No, I'm hiring a car.
Then I'll fax you a map with directions.
Thanks.
Are you going to use an overhead projector?
Yes.
Then I think we should take one with us.
Shall I do that, or will you?
Leave that to me.
I'm going to bring some samples, so I'll need a display stand.
That's no problem. I'll bring one of those, too.
Do you think I should show them the new schedule?
Yes, I do. And they're going to ask a lot of questions about delivery times. Be prepared.
How do you know?
They say so in their briefing notes. Haven't you read them?
I've been very busy.
But, Bob, the notes tell you what they're going to ask.
Okay, I'll look through them tonight. Are you staying to watch my presentation?
It'll be difficult. I've got to meet someone for lunch.
I think there should be two of us there.
I'll explain. They'll understand.
I'm not very happy about it. You shouldn't leave a presentation halfway through.
Part 2. Growth and Development.
How long has SoftBank been in business?
The company started in 1981. At that time, the PC was just a toy. No one was distributing software. No one even knew what software was available.
The growth's been phenomenal then.
That's right. Sales revenues have gone up every year since we started. At one time, they were doubling every month.
What's the main growth area now?
Networking. That's really taking off. It includes operating systems, cables, boards, everything you need for the networked company. Before that, the big growth area was business applications, things like word processing packages and spreadsheets.
And before that?
Games. Game software. That's where it all started.
And what about your magazine business? Is that growing?
Yes, indeed. We published 14 different computer magazines last month. But it got off to a poor start initially.
Yeah?
We set up the publishing division just 6 months after we'd set up the distribution business, so we didn't have a lot of money to spare. We launched 2 magazines, printed 50,000 copies, and 85% were returned.
Really?
They just didn't sell, and they were eating up all our profits.
I'm surprised you didn't close them down.
We didn't want people to think we were in trouble. We decided to take a gamble instead. We made them twice as thick, kept the price the same, changed the layout, and printed twice as many. Then we spent all the money we had left on TV advertising.
It obviously worked.
Yes, they sold out in 3 days. 1. How long has SoftBank been in business?
2. Which of the following is not mentioned as one of the networking products?
3. How many computer magazines did they publish last month?
4. When did they set up the publishing division?
5. Why didn't they close down the publishing division when it wasn't successful? Part 3. The early history of the Lego company. 1. Originally, there were just 2 types of Lego brick. One with 4 studs and one with 8. And they weren't very successful. The retailers weren't sure whether they would be able to sell them. So we had to offer them on sale or return. And they sent quite a few boxes back to the factory. 2. We've been in business for over 60 years. The company was founded in Billund in Denmark by Ole Kirk Christensen. He was the village carpenter, and he started out selling wooden stepladders. He always had a lot of little bits of wood left over, so he started making them into wooden toys. 3. When Ole Kirk died, he was succeeded by his son, Gottfried Kirk. Gottfried started working in the company when he was 12 years old, and his father was just setting up the business. So so he was the natural person to take over. We've always been a family company. 4. This was a real turning point for the company. The idea started when Gottfried Kirk met a toy buyer for one of the large department stores. They were talking about the toy market, and the buyer told him about a theory he had. He felt that what the toy market lacked was a toy with a system. It had to be based on a sound idea, it had to be high quality, and it had to develop children's imaginations. Gottfried realized our plastic building bricks had this potential and decided to develop the range. So we created the Lego system of play and launched it in the buyer's store. 5. It was a disaster. It was insured for 52,000 Danish kroner, a lot of money in those days, but it wasn't enough to cover the cost of reconstruction and re-equipping. It meant starting from scratch again, and there were 15 employees by then who all depended on the company. It was probably the saddest moment of old Kirk's career. 6. This is still our biggest market today. The original sales company was set up by a toy manufacturer, Axel Thompson. Axel was so attracted by the idea of the Lego play system that he sold his own factory so that he could spend all his time introducing Lego products to the German market. 7. Old Kirk offered a bottle of homemade wine as a prize to the person who suggested the best name. In fact, he won it himself by combining the Danish words leg godt, which means play well. Later on, he discovered that in Latin, Lego means I put together or I assemble. Quite a coincidence, eh? 8. We were the first toy company in Denmark to use plastic. In fact, we had a visit from the Danish Toy Trade magazine at the time, and they wrote an article about it, saying, plastics will never take the place of good, solid, wooden toys. Fortunately, we didn't listen to their advice. Part 4. How to build team spirit.
Building team spirit is always the focal point of what I try to do as a manager. When I first went to Crystal Palace, players would finish training and then go straight home. There was no atmosphere, so we brought in a pool table and fruit machines. When players choose to spend time together, it generates a better atmosphere. The team spirit is very important, but I don't believe in trying to motivate the team as a team. I try to motivate them as individuals. So I don't give team talks. I speak to the players individually. And I try not to put too much pressure on them. I believe players perform best when they are relaxed. If they're too tense, I can guarantee they won't play well. I also believe in giving people autonomy. I like all the people who work for me to be autonomous. Therefore, I very rarely interfere. I feel people should be judged on their results. If they prove incompetent, then I'm incompetent if I keep on employing them. It's like that with the team. I get criticized for not interfering during a game and making more substitutions. But I feel if I've chosen those 11 players to get a result, then I should leave them alone to get on with it. If I'm dropping a player from the team, I don't feel I have to explain it to them. If they want to discuss it, I'll say, come back and talk about it in a couple of days' time. But I don't try to re-motivate them. It's up to them to have the character to fight back. I'm a great believer that almost everything you achieve in life is down to your attitude. If I have a player who is magnificently gifted but has a stinking attitude, I won't waste my time on them.
Part 5. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence translation.
1. Cyclists should use bike lanes, stay as far right in the lane as possible, obey traffic rules, signal clearly, and wear a helmet.
2. Many of these companies use the occasion of shareholders' meetings
to announce the appointment of new presidents and other changes in top management.
3. While she is very much in control of the company, she goes to pieces if there is any conflict with her daughter.
4. There is a danger that an employee's advancement can be seen as due to the intimate relationships rather than his own worth.
5. The government should work towards reducing class sizes instead of setting up special schools for particular categories of students.
2. Passage translation.
1. A Sunshine Coast teenager was awarded $14,000 compensation after breaking her shoulder during a school camp. She says she has endured the 4-year legal battle for the principal, not for the money. Sinclair, an 11-year-old student then, was riding a bike with about 30 other students along a forestry track in an activity organized by the camp when she realized her bike had no brakes. She was going down a hill, and when she hit the loose sand, she couldn't control the bike. A delay in treatment afterwards, an early misdiagnosis meant her shoulder injury was not treated for 24 hours, resulting in it healing badly. Her parents were so appalled by the incident and the delay in getting proper treatment for their daughter that they felt compelled to take the matter to court.
2. When the team visited a mine crew, 1,660 meters down the mine, the temperature this close to the Earth's core would be about 60 degrees. Physically, it's hard, one of the mine workers said. Your body isn't made for the heat we have down here. But it is not as bad as people think. I couldn't drive in city traffic like people do. People say it's dangerous. Sure it is, but we are all trained to be aware of danger and keep an eye on mates. My offsider was killed a few years ago. It was a freak thing that happened, but I lost 2 mates through cancer who worked on the surface. Unit 13. Part 1. News about a disaster. It is 8 o'clock on Monday, the 24th, November. At least 400 people are feared to have died in a major earthquake, which shook large areas of southern Italy last night.
Most of the devastation has been in towns and villages outside the main cities. But there has been panic in Naples, too, as hundreds of buildings have been destroyed. The massive rescue operation, which is underway, is being hampered by appalling weather conditions and a breakdown in communications. The other headlines. Talks are still going on in Washington in a bid to try and avert a crisis in the Gulf. A firebomb went off in a busy shopping area in East Belfast last night, killing one policeman and injuring several bystanders. Angry teachers have voted to continue their lightning one-day strike action as pay negotiations once more break down. And Princess Diana flies off to the sun, leaving her husband to look after the children. As rescue work continues in wide areas of southern Italy, it is becoming increasingly more likely that the present toll of 400 dead will rise much higher. The tremors were felt all over Italy, from the French border to Sicily. But the worst damage appears to be in small towns and villages, many of them very isolated, outside Naples. Naples itself has also been badly affected. In a little village about 60 miles east of the city, scores of people are thought to have died as the earthquakes hit a village hospital and a local church, as well as many private homes. It appears that there was an evening service going on in the church at the time. In Naples, it was the old part of the city which was worst affected. Many buildings of 8 or 9 stories broke apart and collapsed as the earthquake hit at around 8 p.m. last night. Panic broke out in the main prison. Tear gas was used, and prison officers fired machine guns into the air to try to prevent a riot. A large proportion of inhabitants spent the night in the open in the streets or squares, and as smaller tremors continue, more chaos has ensued as townspeople rush for the countryside, blocking roads and causing traffic jams. Telephone lines have been broken, and electricity and water supplies are failing. The fog and cold conditions are making rescue operations very difficult in some of the remoter parts of the south, particularly where road conditions are not very good. Our own correspondent has been to the disaster area and sends us this report.
Part 2. Business Update. The time is 6 o'clock and here is Business Update with Kevin Scott.
Unemployment has risen to over 3 million for the first time in 6 years, and analysts expect the jobless total to rise by a further 40,000 this month. Manufacturing output has meanwhile steadied after a 0.5% decrease last month. It is thought that today's rise in the unemployment figures could put pressure on the Prime Minister to cut interest rates, though the Bank of England have denied that this is likely. Guinness, Britain's largest drinks group, has announced plans to make 700 staff redundant at its United Distillers subsidiary in Scotland. Union officials have said the job losses are unnecessary. Claire Travers reports.
The redundancies are part of a move by Guinness to improve productivity. But the news of the redundancies has been badly received here in Scotland. I spoke to some of the workers at a United Distillers factory.
It's unnecessary, isn't it? Guinness are always saying we are the world's most profitable spirits company.
Aye, we're making a profit. We're not making a loss.
It's devastating. It will destroy entire communities.
Guinness strongly deny that communities will collapse as a result of the job losses. They say they will improve investment in business. The group's cost-cutting measures also extend to Spain, where they will make job cuts at Cruz Campo, Spain's largest brewer, employing 30,000 people. Guinness bought Cruz Campo 2 years ago to expand into the fast-growing Spanish economy. The Spanish beer market shrank by about 5% last year.
The tobacco industry had today hit back at the Department of Health about cigarette advertising. They've issued a report arguing that cigarette advertisements do not encourage people to smoke more and that they only encourage people to switch brands. The report is based on data collected from more than 90 countries around the world. It conflicts with figures issued by the Department of Health last month, which suggested that banning advertisements would result in a drop in consumption. A spokesperson for the tobacco industry said, if a product is legally available, then it should be legal to advertise it. The Conservative MP, David Willett, has called for the government to raise the state retirement age to 67 for both men and women. In a report published today by the Social Market Foundation, Mr. Willett argues that raising the pension age would cut at least £5 billion from the Social Security budget. He also suggests that some of the savings should be plowed back into higher state pensions for the over 80s. And finally, in preparation for the introduction of high-speed trains, British Rail is recruiting volunteers for an unusual job. Ruth Mallon has the details.
British Rail's volunteers will be tied to posts next to railway lines while high-speed trains pass by at 140 miles per hour. The experiment is designed to test the effects of turbulence, and British Rail hope to establish whether it is feasible for maintenance teams to work while the new trains are running. Many British Rail staff have already volunteered for the tests, and surprisingly, so have more than 50 members of the public. A British Rail spokesperson said, "People have been ringing in to say, we think it sounds exciting and we'd like to try it." One caller described it as their railway equivalent to bungee jumping. British Rail has thanked all volunteers, but say they will only be using experienced staff.
And that's all for today. The next news is at 7 o'clock, and we'll be back again at 6 o'clock tomorrow with Business Update.
Part 3, a news broadcast.
Have already been destroyed. Police said that about 500 homes were washed away by floods after rain struck the west coast of the island yesterday, bringing driving rain and winds of up to 84 miles per hour. The typhoon flooded wide areas of Taiwan and crippled communications and power supplies. All domestic flights were canceled yesterday, and Taipei's Chiang Kai-shek International Airport was closed for about 5 hours. Government radio reported that two passenger ferries had been sunk but gave no details of casualties. The work of emergency relief teams is being hampered by blocked roads and the loss of power and telephone communications in central regions. It will be some time before we hear the final casualty figures. This is Peter Donnelly in Taipei.
There will be another report from our correspondent in Taipei in the 9 o'clock news tonight. And now here is a roundup of today's news. Police in New York last night seized 33 kilos of pure heroin with a street value of $70 million in what officials said was one of the biggest U.S. drug seizures in 10 years. The one-month-old occupation of a Michelin tire factory in Belgium ended today when workers voted to accept an agreement which guarantees them full pay for a year. The Soviet Union will help India prospect for onshore oil under an agreement signed in Moscow today, the official news agency TASS reported. And the main news today, 29 people were killed and 10 were reported missing when typhoon rain ripped across central Taiwan last night. And now over to Bob Taylor.
Violence erupted in Ulster late last night after a loyalist parade in the mainly Republican village of Rasharkin County, Antrim. Bottles and bricks were thrown as opposing factions clashed, and 8 RUC members and 2 civilians were injured, none of them seriously. 9 people were arrested. Police estimated that 150 people had been involved in the violence, during which the windows of 2 pubs and 3 houses were smashed. Also in Northern Ireland, a part-time policeman has been injured in a terrorist attack in Ballymena, County Antrim. He was hit by shots fired from a car. His condition after an emergency operation is described as stable. 7 men in Stoke were in custody today following a double stabbing, which left one man dead and another injured. The pub fight was at the White Lion in North End Crescent and spread to a nearby fish and chip shop. Two motorbikes were set on fire during the incident. Police have appealed for witnesses to come forward. And an 83-year-old pensioner, Bill Williams, of Chetelum, found himself in trouble with police over some innocent-looking plants. A passing drug squad officer looked into his greenhouse and discovered that the plants were, in fact, cannabis. Mr. Williams says, "I've never used drugs in my life. I just thought the plants looked nice." The police say there'll be no charges. And now, a travel flash from Jenny Browning.
We have a message for drivers traveling south on the M6 in Lancashire. An accident on the southbound carriageway of the M6 in Lancashire is causing congestion and delays between junctions 32 and 31 near Preston. Drivers are asked to take extra care on the approach as the warning signals are out of function. The road should be clear in about an hour's time.
Part 4. Financial News. A. The pound plunged to its lowest level against the dollar for 4 years as the American currency soared to a new peak on the world financial markets. Share prices received a shock yesterday when the government increased interest rates to 15%. As a result, the FTSE slumped 42 points, closing at 2,281, its lowest level for 10 weeks. Mixed Data announced reductions in its workforce yesterday. Because of the small dip in profits, the company is in the red for the first time. Yesterday, in a major collapse on the Tokyo stock market, the Nikkei average plunged 559 points because of the failure of the powerful New York bond market and because of a sudden surge in profits from its overseas operations. Drexel is back in the black after 2 years of disappointing results.
B. Now with the business news, here's Neil Cassidy.
Good morning. Well, there's nothing like an attack of nerves on Wall Street for unsettling the world's stock markets. Already, an overnight plunge of 53.71 in the Dow Jones has had an impact in the Far East. As a result, the UK market is likely to be depressed later this morning. The Dow fell almost 2% to 2,882, ending a rally that's been going on for several weeks. Here's Richard Cray from New York.
Yes, as the Dow Jones has risen steadily towards the 3,000 mark, there's been a lot of uncertainty here, particularly about the economy. Dealers say that in the absence of the drop in interest rates, the market is a little depressed, and a lot of people have pulled out because they felt nervous about corporate profits.
Back home, having fallen 21 points yesterday, the London share market badly needs good news to improve the situation. However, rumors that Britain's trade figures for the next quarter are disappointing again will not help. Now the market numbers. Tokyo has fallen sharply in line with New York. The Nikkei down 274 at 321,027.7. That's a drop of 1.5%. Because of the fears that Congress may still impose protectionist measures against Japanese imports, the market continues to be jumpy. That's all from the business news. More news at 6:20.
Thank you, Neil. And now back to Anna in the...
Part 5. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. We have every right to ask why employees' views have not been considered in making these changes.
2. I think the key to the whole thing now is cooperation. But what we have had in the past is just denial and conflict.
3. The minister announced major changes to workers' compensation procedures, including changes to legislative definitions that would widen access of injured workers to compensation.
4. a United States study showed that one in four people had lingering fright from a movie or TV show they saw as a child.
5. No one seems to be sure what role the foreign military force is playing in the current unrest in the densely populated areas.
2. Passage translation.
1. If you're planning to retire and wish to maximize the security of your capital, or would like a guaranteed income, or simply to minimize your tax, let us take the worry out of your retirement. David Thompson, who is a leading advisor in this field, is happy to work with you to plan for your retirement. Start planning now. It is never too early. In fact, there are a number of planning strategies you could be implementing now that may help to lessen the taxes that you could otherwise incur in retirement. We encourage you to take advantage of our offer to have a confidential interview. This will cost you nothing, only your time.
2. Perhaps most of us would fly into a rage when hearing that we are similar to a monkey. But in fact, we must admit that we do share many fundamental characteristics with a monkey. From the point of view of evolution, for instance, man originated from the anthropoid millions of years ago, while the modern monkey is similarly found to be descended from the ancient ape through long ages of evolution. Besides the resemblance of the social organizational pattern between man and monkey is conspicuous. Men are gregarious and generally live in groups, and monkeys also live, play, and act together and are led by a monkey king, which has an absolute authority over the other monkeys. Unit 14. Part 1. Frightening Experiences.
Brian, you've had some fairly horrifying experiences in your life, haven't you? I mean, having lived all over the world and things like that.
Yes, I've been in earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, seen tidal waves, volcanoes erupting, just about everything, all possible. Floods, all possible natural disasters. But I think the most frightening experience was being involved in a bus crash.
In this country?
No, this was in Africa, in a bus which was going through the countryside on a dirty road. It was a bus crowded with people, crowded with luggage, and the bus had stopped at a small town, at a bar, where the driver had a few beers, and then loaded a crate of beer on the bus on the roof rack. When we eventually set off from that place, the driver got up speed and suddenly ran off the road. I remember the bus turning over two or three times, and it grabbing hold of the handle, and eventually the bus came to rest upside down. All I could feel was a tremendous bang on the head, which later turned out to be the crate of beer. The only sound was of the engine still running.
People weren't screaming and things like that?
No. There was a dead silence. Absolute shock silence. And it was a long way from any town or any village. And the only thing you could hear was the engine. The driver ran away into the bush. He was frightened. So what happened was, everybody crawled out through the back window and left their suitcases and possessions, and everyone was terrified the bus would explode. And eventually, someone had the sense to turn the engine off, and we all crawled back in again to get our possessions. And no one seemed particularly injured. Everyone was just shocked and stunned. And it was only after about 10 or 15 minutes of sitting on the ground that people began to collapse and become unconscious, and suddenly appear very seriously injured. Eventually, a lorry came and took us to the hospital, and it was only in hospital I realized just how serious it was. A girl sitting next to me on the bus was also sitting next to me in the hospital, and the nurse was asking for her age, her religion, etc. And suddenly, the girl just lay down and died, and three other people who'd been sitting near me also died. So I think, even though I've been in earthquakes and floods, that was the most frightening experience, being in the bus as it turned over and over.
1. Where did Brian have his most frightening experience?
2. What was the bus passenger's first response to the accident?
3. When did the bus passenger start to show signs of serious injury?
4. How many people were killed in the accident? Part 2. A strange experience. 1.
The night of Julia's strange encounter was wild and stormy. The rain beat against her windscreen, and the trees swayed in the wind as she drove home. There was no moon to lighten the lonely country lane, but occasional flashes of lightning lit up the sea far below, the waves crashing against the cliffs. Julia turned up the music on her stereo and wished she hadn't decided to drive back from the party on her own. It had been well after midnight when she left, but the other guests had shown no signs of leaving. She had decided to go, even though she had no very clear idea of the way home. It was the first time she had been to this friend's house, and now she was beginning to think she had taken a wrong turn. She was afraid she was lost. Suddenly, she slammed her foot on the brake. There was a large black object in the middle of the road blocking her way. She stopped just in time and saw two green eyes staring back at her, reflecting the beam of her headlights. Julia realized it was the largest cat she had ever seen. It just sat there, looking straight at her. What on earth was it doing in the middle of the road, and in a thunderstorm and the pouring rain in the middle of nowhere? Perhaps it was injured. Julia switched off the engine and picked up her torch. She got out and went up to the cat, but just as she shone her torch on it, the cat meowed, stretched, and walked off into the trees. Julia was both puzzled and annoyed as she got back into her car. She was wet through, though she'd only been out a few seconds. Oh well, she thought, at least I'm not completely alone on this road. She turned the key in the ignition. Nothing. The engine would not start. She tried again and again, but the engine was completely dead. Julia shivered. She was cold and wet, but she was also beginning to panic. She wondered what to do. Should she try to find a phone box? No, there didn't seem to be any sign of civilization near here. And besides, she would probably catch pneumonia if she went out into the rain again. She sat in the dark, listening to the rain drumming on the roof. She couldn't even listen to the radio now. She wrapped her coat around her and settled down to wait for morning. Gradually, she calmed down and began to feel sleepy. The rain went on and on. Suddenly, she sat up. Wide awake, she realized the rain had stopped. She could only hear the beating of her heart. Why was she so afraid? Then she heard it. Someone was opening the passenger door. Julia screamed.
Part 3. A strange experience. 2. Are you lost? Said a gentle voice. Julia was too frightened to speak. A woman had opened the door of the car and was leaning in, looking at her kindly. She looked as if she was in her 40s, with long black hair and large, rather sad eyes. She was wearing a long blue overcoat, rather old-fashioned, Julia thought, with a bright red scarf wrapped tightly round her neck. Her hair and clothes were soaking wet, but Julia noticed that the rain had almost stopped, though the wind was still strong. The sky had cleared, and now the full moon shone down brightly. "Are you all right?" the woman said again. "Oh, yes, thank you," Julia stammered. "But my car won't start. Do you know if there's a phone box near here?" "Well," said the woman, "I'll take you to a house, and you can phone from there." Without waiting for an answer, she set off ahead, and Julia had to run to catch her up. The woman walked fast and said very little. After a few minutes, they came round a corner and saw a small cottage hidden in some trees. The woman walked straight up to the front door and knocked loudly. The house was quiet and dark. She knocked again. This time, a light went on upstairs. Julia heard someone coming down the stairs, and then the door was opened slowly by a gray-haired man in a dressing gown.
Yes, he said. What do you want at this time of night? Julia waited for the woman to speak, but suddenly she realized that the woman was not there. She must have walked off quietly as they were waiting for the man to open the door. Oh, well, my car's broken down. I'm sorry to wake you up, but you see... Julia didn't know quite what to say. Come in, come in, said the old man. It's not a night to be out in. As he spoke, Julia noticed that he was looking over her shoulder out into the night. It was as if he was expecting someone else. Julia went in. There's no point in phoning anyone now, he said, before she could speak. It's 4 in the morning, and besides, you look exhausted. You can sleep in the spare bedroom. Upstairs in the room, the man opened a wardrobe and pulled out a nightgown. These are my wife's clothes, he said, but they should fit you. As he closed the wardrobe, Julia glimpsed a bright red scarf hanging up. When he had left her, Julia opened the wardrobe again. Yes, there was the scarf hanging neatly over the shoulders of a long blue overcoat. Julia reached out her hand and touched them. They were wet. How strange, Julia thought. Just then, she saw a photograph standing on the bedside table. It was a picture of a woman. She was about 40, with long dark hair and large, sad eyes. It's her, thought Julia. She must be his daughter. But where did she go? And how did she manage to put her coat and scarf away? Julia was too tired to think anymore. She got into bed and fell asleep. When she woke up, the sun was shining, and looking out of the window, she could see the sea was calm after the storm. Downstairs, in the kitchen, the old man was alone, making coffee. Morning, he said. Sit down and have some breakfast. Thank you, said Julia. I suppose it was your daughter who brought me here last night. My daughter? Said the man. No, I don't have any children. Then who's that in the photo upstairs? Said Julia. Ah, said the man, suddenly looking very sad. That was my wife, God bless her. She disappeared 20 years ago. It was a stormy night, just like last night. She never came back. She must have slipped off the cliffs and drowned, but we never found the body. If only she hadn't gone out to look for William. I knew he'd be all right, though he was only small then. William? Whispered Julia. Ah, here he comes now, said the old man. The kitchen door swung open, and in walked an enormous black cat. It looked up at her, and Julia knew she had seen those green eyes before.